Yeah. Here he goes again.
More picks, no plan.
You like the draft, we get it, man.
Same take, new frills.
A spreadsheet rebuild.
A spreadsheet rebuild.
Welcome back to another solo ride on the Big Red Bus. Doug Tonis here with you, taking the bus out onto the glorious streets of Roselle. Maybe we'll pull into Schaumburg as we drive the bus around and do a mailbag version of the Big Red Bus. So, first, we've got a couple questions coming to you from Nathan. First asks, assuming Caleb Wilson is more or less what we saw in Summer League, modest projects to be an above-average starter, how would you build around that duo in the next years to be a contender? And I think the biggest problem with answering this question is, what do you think Caleb Wilson actually showed in Summer League? Do you think Caleb Wilson showed you he is a future 1A alpha type player in Summer League? Because I think he showed like a lot of really positive signs. And maybe what you're saying with the statement is, assuming we get the best case version of Caleb Wilson doing the things he did in Summer League, what would you do next? Maybe kind of read it that way. I think that's still like a pretty open question. And I guess I would start with, obviously, you need to find some way to get an elite guard. I mean, I don't think Josh Giddey is going to be that guy. And that would be a really challenging proposition. Like, you know, you're just not going to necessarily be able to trade for an elite guard. We don't have like a tremendous amount of assets. I mean, I guess you could always just say, here's our next four first round draft picks, you know, every other year and swaps in between. And that becomes a pretty viable package, but you'd have to be awfully certain that you can just have these three guys, Modest, Caleb, and that guard. You know, if you traded for a superstar type guard with that package, you'd have to assume those three guys are going to be able to get the job done with basically only mid-level exception signings afterwards. And I just don't think you could be confident about that type of solution right now. I just think you're like too far away to make that kind of decision. So I think, you know, the gist of it would still be just very opportunistic about everything. Like you've probably got 2 years before you have to figure anything out. You know, 2 years you'll have to decide on whether you're going to keep Modest Bezelis. You'll have a better idea. Is he going to be a max player? Is he going to be a mid-level exception player? Is he going to be something in between? Is he just going to somehow be a total bust and be less than that? You know, I think right now you'd probably project him somewhere in between, like a 30 million-ish, 35 million-ish type player. But it's not hard to see how with a little bit of improvement he could be better. It's, I guess, maybe also not hard to see if he stagnates that he could be a lot lower than that too. So I'm projecting Modest to get considerably better over the next 2 years, but we'll see ultimately if that ends up happening or not. If you do, you've got two really nice pieces in Caleb and Modest who are at the 3 and 4 and feel like to me that they could play together. You'll have a huge size advantage. You'll have great athleticism. Yeah, expect Modest to develop into a plus defender. I expect Caleb Wilson to develop into a plus defender. I expect both those guys to be two-way guys. And so having two big wings that are both two-way guys is, you know, really a solid starting spot. And so then it just becomes, how can you get a star guard, a role-playing center, you know, and a good maybe 3-and-D shooter? And I'm not sure that you have any of those pieces right now in the roster. You know, I'm pretty confident you don't have any of those pieces on the roster. Like Norm Powell could be that shooter but he's just going to age out of that equation, you know, prior to when you need him. So the rest becomes to me, can you move Norm Powell for picks later on? Can you move Nick Claxton for picks later on? Can you, you know, add something else that's more future laden to just give you more shots? You'd have the chance to maybe start looking at free agency or other pieces in the future instead of just the draft. You know, as Caleb and Modest get older, you're going to want to start trying to find older options for them and maybe not try, you know, to get them through the draft. You are going to have plenty of room next year in free agency to chase different guys. And so, of course, you have that route. I don't think it's necessarily going to look like a, you know, tremendous free agent class again. You just don't see a lot of guys going in free agency, you know, the way they used to. So I think that is going to always be a challenging thing. You know, it's like you've got a lot of these older star players that probably aren't going to fit in with that timeline. Like, you know, maybe you could chase Kyrie Irving as an example. But is Kyrie Irving really going to be someone that you're going to be excited about, pairing up, given his history and his injuries and things like that? You've got lots of kind of like older MVP type guys like Curry, could be out there. Maybe Nikola Jokic will be out there if he doesn't come to an extension. Maybe I think Anthony Davis might be a free agent at the end of that year. I'm trying to remember. But I think that's like one of those things. There's just not going to be a lot out there that you're going to be super excited to get that I think is going to be able to be gotten. And so you're probably going to be looking to maybe use your cap space to acquire someone. Maybe you're going to start looking at using some of your future picks to bring in that player. I think actually who would be really interesting, even though everyone will throw up in their mouth when I say it, is at some point if you brought back Zach LaVine. I know, everyone just cringed and hated themselves. He feels like a guy to me that might end up being like so undervalued because of how expensive he was for so long that you might be able to find him at a real discount. Granted, Zach is also going to be entering an age point in his career where that doesn't fly. I know everyone just screamed he's a loser and blah, blah, blah. Carl Anthony Towns was viewed as a loser, a year ago. So sometimes it just takes being around the right guys. I think that's tricky. I don't think there is any real answer to this question because I think you're just too far away from being a contender to have like a next move plan that gets you there. So I think it is about trying to acquire the star guard talent. My default would probably be if there's an opportunistic trade, I would make it. If there's not an opportunistic trade, then it's still probably accumulating assets, accumulating good contracts, just making good, consistent decisions over and over again, and then eventually hoping that the right opportunity comes because you're just making sound investments and sound choices over and over, and you're consistently stacking your roster with better players on reasonable deals, adding draft picks when you can, et cetera. And then eventually you hope you can cash that currency in for what you need at the time you need it. But I think you're still going to be probably at least 2 years away before that question is even remotely relevant, and maybe longer than that. Second follow-up, I wake up tomorrow to a zombie apocalypse. Myself and my immediate family are the only confirmed survivors. I have enough gas to get within 15 miles of my house and a zombie-free window of clear passage. Where am I going? That's interesting. I've not really watched a lot of The Walking Dead. And I guess it kind of depends. Like, the jail seemed like a pretty great place to be when they were locked up there, on the inside the couple early seasons. I don't know where there's a jail though. And probably if there's a bunch of zombies everywhere where there's zombies there. I think the best thing I can think of is I would probably just drive out west to a spot where I've got good, clean water. And like lack of people around, and so there probably won't be a lot of zombie foot traffic, and then hopefully enough supplies that I can manage. But I can't say I'm much of a planner in such places. Maybe I'll just like find a gun and kill myself, to be honest, in the zombie apocalypse. I don't know that I want to be like the last person alive. It might not be the most fun. So that got dark quickly. Thank you, Nathan. From Richard. Let's say the Bulls stay out of the bottom three in the East and get another top four pick. Caleb Wilson shows strong signs of being the guy. Are you taking a specific kind of player in the next draft, like a big, or are we still in the best player available stage of the rebuild? I think you are always in the best player available stage of the draft. There's never a point in time where you should take a player because you think he fits what you need more so than a player who you think is going to be better. You just always take the guy you think has the best future. The example I think makes this clear to me, or one that Bulls fans will resonate with, is we took Doug McDermott instead of taking Zach LaVine, who's like the next player. And Zach LaVine was viewed as like a project, and Doug McDermott was viewed as kind of like someone who's going to come in and help you right away and shoot. And then I think it was like Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic were the guys we traded up, traded to get to the point where we could take Doug McDermott. And Doug McDermott, maybe eventually became an okay shooter. He's still had a pretty long career, ended up shooting the ball pretty well, but never helped the Bulls with anything. The problem with draft picks fundamentally is they do not help you win games right away. Rookies do not help you win games. It's like pretty unheard of. Now, if you get LeBron or Victor Wembanyama, like maybe there's an exception to that. But if you're not getting a generational talent, of course, who is also going to be the best player available, not a guy you pick because of his need, rookies just don't help you win games. It takes a while to get into the league, get good enough at everything in the league, get through all the little things, you know, adjust to the speed of the game, learn your teammates, all the sophisticated stuff. It just takes a while before your impact is good. You can flash all kinds of signs, but rookies just generally don't help you win. And so when you're looking at building a team, I think you have to look at the fact that for the most part, you turn over players like pretty frequently. You know, so if you're looking at a guy and saying like, is he, you know, I need this for this year, you're just going to be really disappointed if you take a rookie for that reason. Now, let's say Noah Senge is a stud. I know it's hard to imagine, but let's just say it happens. And let's say Caleb Wilson is a stud and Mattis Buzelis is a stud. And you're like, man, like there's just no time for anyone to play these 3-4 minutes. I got three guys who are amazing here. And there's a fourth guy who's like 6'10", modest-like prospect who looks good. And there's, you know, also a 6'3 guard who, you know, who looks, yeah, maybe not quite as good, but about the same. And you say, like, tiebreaker goes to, like, I really need a guard. You know, maybe this guy's got great point guard skills and these other three guys are young and they project to be here, you know, for many years and they kind of cover this position. Maybe you could convince me in that, like, that case where there's just, like, no hope for minutes that I should take the guard. But even then, I probably wouldn't. I'd take the best player available because you never know. Noah Senge gets hurt or Mattis Buzelis gets hurt or Caleb Wilson gets hurt. And all of a sudden, you still want the best guy. Like, in the end, you always want the best guy. And you just can't count on any player really making an impact for you for, I'd say, like, more than, like, 2 years. Just between injuries and roster turnover and what things might happen and other opportunities. Like, you'd rather have a ton of guys who are really good at one position and then trade one, let the other guy develop, and then have the better player than you would have a guy who fits better. You know, it's like, would you not have taken Jimmy Butler because he was going to play behind Luol Deng, or do you rather eventually have traded Luol Deng and now you've got Jimmy Butler waiting in the wings? And, you know, I think that that's the kind of like bullsy way I could state that scenario. But I would always take the best player regardless of how ready we are to compete. I would never count on a rookie being a guy who's going to fill a valuable need for me in the next year while I'm competing. And if I'm not competing, I would obviously want the best eventual player because I'm probably going to turn over almost the entire roster before I'm competing. So that's kind of my overall thought there. All right. Kelder, 23. How bad are the Bulls if Giddey is third in the league in touches again? I don't know that I've ever like looked at touches. Is he like third in total touches? Is he third in touches per game? I'm not sure. Like, feels like he wouldn't have been third in total touches. That would be crazy because I thought he missed enough games or that wouldn't have been likely unless I'm just like totally misremembering how many games Giddey played. I thought he missed like 10 games, but maybe I'm just hallucinating. No, Giddey missed a bunch of games last year. He had 54 games played. So clearly that must have been a touches per game stat then. I would say in my head, I don't think Josh Giddey having a lot of touches is necessarily bad, right? Like, he's going to touch the ball almost every possession. He gets a lot of defensive rebounds. That will probably continue. He'll bring the ball up the court. They'll get the ball to him even if he doesn't get the defensive rebound. He moves the ball pretty quickly. Like, I don't think he's going to be a heavy on-ball player. I don't think the Bulls have a lot of isolation players on the team, so I expect they'll move the ball a lot. I expect Giddey will be the guy that is in the middle of that movement, you know, very frequently, even if he moves the ball off to Caleb Wilson or Mattis Buzelis or whoever, they're going to move the ball back to him pretty frequently. So I expect his touches to be pretty high, and I don't think I would correlate that with any particular number of wins or losses. Like, if he has fewer touches, they'll do better, or if he has more touches, they'll do worse. I mean, I think they're going to be a bottom 10 team in the league next year. I don't think that's particularly shocking conclusion to make. They have a long way to go, you know, as I mentioned just talking earlier about best players available in the draft. Rookies just don't impact winning a lot, and so Caleb Wilson, who showed tremendous flashes and I'm incredibly excited about, like, I don't think he's going to elevate the Bulls from a winning perspective a whole lot in year one. He's going to be learning a whole lot and growing a whole lot, getting a lot better, and a very high in his long-term potential. But I don't think he's going to like add 10 wins or anything. He's going to struggle defensively a lot. He's going to struggle offensively a lot. And he's going to show you flashes of just unbelievable awesomeness a lot too. But that inconsistency is going to be there his rookie year, most likely. And when it becomes consistent, that's when you're going to see all the wins stack up. And that's probably not going to be for a couple of years where you see the really big impact on winning. So in that sense, I don't think that stat's going to correlate much. I would predict the Bulls to probably have somewhere like the fifth or sixth worst record in the league, you know, maybe 28 wins or so, something around that nature, 28 to 30 wins, maybe 25 to 30 wins, somewhere in that boat. We've got favorite Bulls uniform from Abe, and he's got one. I can only describe it in the image as being just plain red with the white, you know, kind of borders around the sleeves. The word Bulls is the logo. And of course, it's Michael Jordan jersey with 23s. this is going to be a super weird answer because I don't really have a lot of jersey thoughts, to be honest. But I do really like a lot of the Bulls. Was it the city jerseys or statement jerseys that they've done? I got to look back and find which year it was that they had them. But there was one that had, I think it was like, and I'm quickly searching through images, trying to find it. It was like gold with black, and it kind of had this like little like red echo around the Chicago. It had this like very God, I can't even describe the font, but like kind of like old town Chicago 30s style looking font to it, and it had a little gold crisscrossy pattern up the sides. And I don't know, it's probably nowhere near the best jersey in any way, but it just stood out to me when I first saw it. It was just like, wow, they really did a great job with this statement jersey. Also love the one with the red trim around the sleeves and the neck hole, and all black, and then had the word Chicago going vertically down the front. I thought that was a great statement jersey as well. So those are a couple. Like all the other Bulls jerseys, whether they're the black pinstripes or maybe my favorite of the classics or just any of the other things, like they all just kind of blend together. I mean, they're all either just like Bulls on them or Chicago in different fonts, and they're red, white, and black, and you know, I don't know, like those to me all kind of bled together. So the city jerseys to me always stood out a little bit because their design was like just much more unique than the regular jerseys. And so I just appreciated how much they stood out from the other ones. Probably not necessarily better if I saw them every game, but I always loved just seeing the unique jersey out there for that like very limited time. I always enjoyed those. All right. From my good buddy Bulls Therapy. Who are the targets for next offseason after we get off some of our expirings? He wants to feel better about kicking the can down the road. I hate to break it to you, Justin. There's probably no real meaningful help coming. I kind of covered what was coming in free agency, I think, earlier. There just isn't a lot. I think like what you're going to end up doing, which makes the most sense, and when I get to the mailbag questions, I'll kind of tie one thought I had as an example that ties a bunch of these things together in a way and talk a little bit about that. I think you'll be looking to absorb something with your salary where you can use that salary to do something interesting. And I don't think you're going to get a lot of picks back. I've talked at length about I just don't think the value is in the marketplace anymore for how much you can get when you sell a draft pick or take on a bad contract for draft picks. Like that trade just doesn't seem to be paying much in terms of future draft picks anymore, because teams just don't need to move as much money, and to move small amounts of money is just a lot easier than it used to be. So the payment for that trade is just not so high. So I don't think you'll see that, but I do think you might be able to take like a decent player into cap space or an unbalanced trade where someone's a little overpaid and you take on a little bit of premium of what they're overpaid, but you get through that. That's a little hint of an idea I was thinking about today, just on the train on the way into work, of something that would have been interesting for the Bulls. From Tom, we've got finally listened to the cash considerations episode I referenced with Ricky O'Donnell talking about the Esenge rant. He also agrees with you, Ricky. And I can't believe this front office has already given up on him. Could it be that Thiago is trying to mimic Pop and apply some tough love to a player who's not ready? Anything is possible. I won't say that's an impossibility. But what I would say is that Esenge is younger than Deion Swain. He's younger than Caleb Wilson. And we treated him notably different than those two players who got a long leash to do whatever. Now, I don't know why you would not apply tough love, if that's just your mantra, why you would not apply tough love to Caleb Wilson when he was lost on defense at moments and when he was not putting forth effort, why you wouldn't apply that to Deion Swain when the same thing was true, and why you would say Noah Esenge, despite being younger and despite, you know, not really having gotten to play a lot of basketball recently because of his injury and still trying to work his way back into something and desperately needing minutes, any kind of minutes, why you would choose to apply that to him only. To me, I just don't think that that's what's going on. Like, it just doesn't fit the rest of what we saw from everyone else and everything else. It just feels like this was like, yep, we just don't think this is the guy. We threw him out there. We then just said, like, you're not playing with enough force. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. Like, it doesn't seem like what they're doing with anyone else. So I don't buy that as a solution. Is it possible? Sure. I suppose maybe Thiago Splitter in some ways has some relationship with these different guys and he's talked with them. And, you know, like, you don't treat all your kids the same. You treat each kid as they need to be treated to grow in whatever way. And he's decided that this is what Noah Esenge needs. And Deion Swain needs to be, have his feelings put in bubble wrap and treated with kid gloves. And so does Caleb Wilson. And those guys can't take any type of tough coaching. And he just needs to let them run around and be freaking terrible. But Noah Esenge, he's got to just rip into and bench and do whatever. And that's how each of these guys are going to be motivated. But one, that doesn't strike me at all something that would apply to Swain or Caleb Wilson. And I think it would be insulting to say otherwise. Like, listening to both those guys talk, they both look like guys who could be coached hard and deal with harder coaching. Either Thiago Splitter to me is just really, really awful at this. Because Noah Esenge, if I was just kind of like, hear these guys, or I'm just reading the room wrong and Thiago Splitter is reading the room correctly, or it's just kind of how I laid it out. He's just out on them. And, you know, granted, Thiago Splitter is reading a room by him actually being in the room and watching them in practice and other stuff. And there might be pieces of this that we don't see that make this decision more reasonable rather than less reasonable. But I think it almost doesn't matter to me. You played a ton of guys who are not going to be on this team for sure, more minutes than Esenge. And that's just ridiculous. It's just indefensible. Like, this guy just needs time to be on the court, and you should have given it to him here. This was like a zero cost opportunity to do it. And I just think that was a mistake. Now, I'm reading the room by watching the room on TV in small snippets. And so, you know, who knows? Like, maybe the feeling is more justified. But I would have just given Noah more chance and hope that he could look good. And maybe if I was really out on him, I could use him as an asset. And I think the approach they took was terrible, regardless of the reason. Like, I don't think it's going to help Noah develop. I don't think there's any way I could argue that. And it definitely isn't going to help anyone's trade value. So I think this was just a losing proposition all around. Now, this is an impossible question, ironically, from someone named Easy. Besides Bouzelas and Wilson, throw a realistic third wheel superstar to join the squad on a player you'd give everything to add to this duo, in caps, realistic. I mean, like, how do you find a realistic superstar? Because, like, superstars are just not realistic to get pretty much anytime, right? Like, it's not realistic until it is realistic. And so in that sense, I think it is really hard. But I have no answer to that. If I was going to start thinking about things, like, Lauri Markkanen feels to me like a guy the Jazz might not think about long term, or you could maybe move off of him, or, you know, at some point. Like, I wouldn't surprise me if he's on the market. But does he fit with our guys? Like, no. It's like really hard to see that in any type of way. Could the Indiana Pacers have a really bad season and Tyrese Halliburton really struggle because he's still recovering from an Achilles and they just decide, whatever, we're going to blow it up and move Halliburton? And then maybe you buy Halliburton if he's still a little bit distressed because of the recovery from the Achilles. And then he recovers further from then and then becomes that guy you want. Like, it's a lot of dots you'd have to connect to get there, but I feel like that's not altogether impossible. Is Tyler Hero someone who might be available at some point? Like, I think that is feasible, but probably runs you a little bit low of superstar. One interesting one to me is, would it be hard for you to envision Anthony Edwards demanding out of Minnesota if they have a bad year? Like, if the fit does not work between him and LaMelo Ball, or maybe even for that matter, could LaMelo Ball not fit with Edwards and he's on the move again right away? Those might be two more possibilities of guys who like that situation. Like, if it doesn't work this year and they just determine this is not stable, like something could have to change almost right away if that duo just doesn't play together. One of those guys could be together. Obviously, in that scenario, you'd rather have Edwards than LaMelo Ball, most likely. But I do think LaMelo Ball is like intriguing and probably the cost is lower, and maybe the Timberwolves would be more excited to do that trade, if you gave up enough draft assets. My thought with that though is it's really hard for me to envision the Timberwolves wanting draft assets when they would rather get someone who complements Edwards right away. So you might need a third team in that deal. And then if you just wanted to like take a shot at catching a falling knife, would like Scoot Henderson be someone who's like likely available? Or Ja Morant, even though the Blazers just acquired him, like they didn't really give up anything. Like, is that a guy you could maybe chase and rehab into something later? And if you've asked me all those things, like none of those guys are like really exciting, in the grand scheme of things, outside of maybe Anthony Edwards, maybe LaMelo Ball. Maybe LaMelo Ball would be the most realistic guy I think you could acquire. If that situation goes south quickly, who would maybe fit in really well with the guys we have and be kind of interesting based on what we need, assuming Modest and Caleb Wilson are both like really good players. Bryce and Graham mentioned, sorry, from Larry Hughes Jr., who maybe still has the website. Hey, Larry Hughes, why are you taking so many bad shots.com? I think that was the website, which one of my favorite stories from a guy who's to work for the Bulls, pointed out to Larry Hughes the site, and Larry Hughes's response was, "They pay me a lot of money to take those shots," which I thought is the perfect response. Anyway, Larry Hughes Jr. Bryce and Graham mentioned getting bad trade offers during an early press conference with Splitter, maybe a comparison of first offseason in Bulls organization. Kraus, Paxson, AK Graham, see how they compare. God, I could not even begin to tell you what happened in Jerry Krause's first offseason with the Bulls. Like, I did not know any of the nuance of that situation well enough to even guess what was happening in his first offseason. So we're gonna punt that a little bit, and we're going to move on to John Paxson, who took over in the 2003-2004 offseason. And I think you're going into this period. You've got Jay Williams, who had just kind of like ruined his career. You still have Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry on the roster, who are young, and haven't really done anything. He's inherited Jalen Rose, who is a bad max contract on the team. And you've kind of got this whole thing, which is kind of a mess. And so, What he does in this offseason is, pretty unspectacular in the grand scheme of things. He drafts Kirk Heinrich. That was a solid draft pick, nothing spectacular, but a solid draft pick. They signed Scottie Pippen to a thank you for being Scottie Pippen type of contract, which is, I guess just is what it is. And then that's kind of it. Like they don't really do much else in this offseason. So it's kind of like the rest of it is just kind of these, like, they just ran it back for a year. He does replace Bill Cartwright with Scott Skiles in this year. And I think that became a important move. Scott Skiles was part of it, but basically he came in the first year and for the most part just didn't really do a whole lot. Just kind of like punted. And I think they were in kind of a weird spot. So his second offseason was really remarkable. And I think maybe what you're getting at, if you're getting at something, is there's a trend. If we look at Arturas Karnišovas in his first offseason, he also doesn't really do a whole lot. He drafts Patrick Williams. He brings in Billy Donovan as head coach over Jim Boylan. And that is pretty much like the offseason for Arturas Karnišovas that year. The rest of it was pretty mild. It was basically like, we're just going to see what happens. Now, when he gets in the middle of the season, he makes a big midseason trade, and that's when we see Nikola Vucevic trade, which is big, but that's not part of the offseason. So during the offseason, he also doesn't do a whole lot. So what we see with both these guys is they use their draft pick, and they bring a new head coach. And then we get into Bryson Graham, and we've seen something pretty similar. We've brought in a new head coach. Now, Bryson Graham didn't actually fire Billy Donovan, whereas the two previous guys, they made the decision to part ways with a coach under contract to bring in a new coach. Bryson Graham had to pick a new coach when he was brought in. There was an empty slot there because Billy Donovan did not come back on his own. But otherwise, he's mostly used his draft picks. So he had two. He brought in Norm Powell, brought in Nick Claxton. So he's actually had the most moves of anyone. But the reality is the moves he made, be it Claxton, Powell, and re-signing Zach Collins, who was an unrestricted free agent, those moves were all kind of like really short-term sort of punting style of moves. Like none of them were really these long-term moves. They're just kind of like filler roster moves. However you want, I've spoken about them ad nauseum, but like none of them have this like really big long-term impact. So he's also not made a whole lot. And maybe to what I think your point is maybe in your first year, it's hard to get much value because people are just looking to rip you off because you're just new to the job and they just think you'll be bad. And so that's what you're going to do. All right. Bleep, boop, bop. Asks me, bourbon reviews, what's your favorite so far, along with the notes that you prefer? I love a sweet bourbon, especially with a banana note. So Jack Daniel's 10-year has been my jam so far. And then on to the Bulls. Is Modest or Caleb better equipped to play guard small forward? That's interesting. I mean, I guess on defense, I think Caleb has better lateral quickness than Modest Puzelis does. I don't think either of them are equipped to play guard. Oh, you know what? I misread this. To play, I was reading it as guard or small forward, and I think you meant to play and guard the small forward position. I don't think it matters. I think they're going to be like the 3-4, and I think it's just going to be too interchangeable. On defense, you're just going to shove Giddey on the weakest guy. These guys will probably just switch a lot if they need to. I think probably Caleb Wilson is maybe better equipped to defend smaller players because of the lateral quickness. But I think in general, the Bulls are going to probably have to play a system where they have a lot of help. They have a lot of shot blocking. They have a lot of guys who are going to struggle to stay in front of people. And they're going to need Modest, Claxton, Jalen Smith, and Caleb Wilson all to rotate a lot and block a lot of shots. Because they're not going to have a lot of guys that are great at staying in front of guys on the perimeter. But they do get a lot of tall guys that can do a lot of stuff when you get on into the paint. And so they're going to have to rely on a lot of movement of their players on defense. On the offensive side, I think Modest is actually, you know, more set to be in a heavier ball handling role than Caleb Wilson is at this point. I think Caleb is not going to do as much breaking guys down off the bounce. I think he's going to be a guy maybe you set up in the mid post and you get him in isolation with his back to the basket. He's going to make like one spin move, you know, one dribble on the floor, and then use his athleticism and quickness and length to just cover a lot of ground really fast and make a difference. And I think that's how he's going to work. On the offensive end, I think Modest is more likely of those two guys to stand outside of the three-point line, put the ball on the floor for multiple dribbles, take a guy off the dribble and get something done. But I don't think that gap is going to be that big. And I think ultimately the question is not going to be that important, because I think there's not going to be a lot of distinction between what those guys do. I think they're going to look very similar as both guys who are on the bigger end of that 3-4 tandem, or more, a little bit more four-sized, but like with enough three abilities to kind of like, you know, play together. So I think that's probably what you're going to see, is a lot of interchangeability there. As for Bourbons, boy, that could be a whole separate podcast. I would say, you know, holistically, I started with Scotch, and then some friends are like, oh, you should try bourbon instead of Scotch. And I immediately was like, wow, bourbon is so much better than Scotch. And then I recently started drinking some rye. And I would say a good rye is better than a good bourbon. So if we're kind of opening up the category to whiskey overall, I would say, I don't know if there's like a one single favorite thing I've ever tried, but Whistle Pig, single barrel, 10-year barrel proof, Binny's Pick, I think it was like $90 a bottle, was really phenomenal. Any Whistle Pig 10-year small batch, anything like that, is a really good rye. It's just fruit forward, a little bit spicy in the middle, extraordinarily smooth finish. And I just think that's a winner. Buffalo Trace is one of my favorites for like the price versus value. You get like, if you can, sometimes it can be hard to find depending where you're located, but I can get it pretty easily anytime I want for about $27 a bottle. And just phenomenal, like kind of daily drinker at $27 a bottle. Clark and Sheffield Barrel Proof, which is a Binney's brand, is really good value for barrel proof, but it's definitely nowhere near the best. So I wouldn't do that one. But I do like it as a cheap barrel proof, but only on ice. It's not as smooth neat as like the really high-end barrel stuff. E.H. Taylor is now commonly available. That was one that the Buffalo Trace Distillery was made hard to find, and I think that was difficult for a while to get your hands on, but now it's all over the place. That one is always pretty good, though. The Binney's guy I was talking to said they're now just shoving it out there in bulk, and so the quality has dropped a little bit. I've not bought a bottle since it became so commonly available, so I'm not sure if that's true or not, but it wouldn't be so difficult to believe. But maybe they've just been storing it, and it's, you know, it just, there's a lot of volume of it out there now. So I guess if I'm thinking about it, some other really good value picks I would have, Four Roses single barrel. I don't really care for the standard Four Roses formula. There's 10 different Four Roses formulas, but the single barrel formula that's out there now, which is, I believe it's the OBSV formula, is really good. I also like the OESV formula. Those are both like very fruit forward formulas, but the single barrel is the OBSV. So it's a commonly available at a reasonable price, $40 at Binney's. So I think that's a good one. Lots of other stuff I try. Basil Hayden Dark Rye, I think, is another really good rye. That's about $50 a bottle, which is maybe a little bit over what I'd want to pay for a daily drinker and something I'm not doing like really specially. And then the standard Woodford Reserve, I think, is phenomenal. That's like $30 a bottle. I like that a lot. I actually like that more than the Double Oaked, which everyone loves Woodford Double Oaked, which is about twice the price, and so it's totally worth it. Not like, maybe just not a really big oaky guy, so I don't like the Double Oaked. So standard Woodford Reserve is another really good one for just like $30 a bottle. That's usually my go-to if I'm like at a bar and I want to get something that I'm not paying just so much money for. Woodford Reserve, they almost always have, and it's usually not that expensive. So that's maybe like some of my picks there. If you're interested in coming to a Bulls event / whiskey tasting, you know, please shoot me a message. I will host a game. I will have maybe 24, 30 bottles of stuff we can go through and try and, yeah, make sure you Uber home. All right. So I promised you one actual thought that was not mailbag, and it's going to tie a bunch of these things together. So a lot of questions that came in were sort of hinting about, like, all right, we kind of feel like maybe if all things pan out, we got two pieces. We got Modest Buzelis. We have Caleb Wilson. No one seems real excited in this version of the mailbag to think that Dalen Swain's going to be a piece. I guess if you follow me, it's not so surprising. No one in this version of the mailbag seemed to put Josh Giddey out there as a future big piece to this team. And I think both those things are probably true. Either of those players may have a role, but I don't think you should look at either of those players as top three players on this team. So if you look at that and you're looking for the next player, and I think that player has to be a guard. One thing I was just, I don't know why, it just hit me out of nowhere this morning. I was just like, you know what would have been really interesting is if the Bulls had not traded for Nick Claxton, would the Boston Celtics have traded Jaylen Brown to Chicago for their 2027 draft pick and, like, I don't know, something else. Like, you know, like maybe just that draft pick. Maybe 2027 and 2029. We give up two draft picks for Jaylen Brown. Would they have rather done that? And we could have taken Jaylen Brown entirely into cap space rather than forcing them to take Paul George. So you're saving them $120 million. And I think maybe you could have got that trade done without including two draft picks because of the money. Like, I mean, Paul George is just bad salary. So I think maybe it would work out that way. And now maybe it's the case. There's a rumor that Jaylen Brown was kind of like sabotaging where he could go and you know, saying he would be unhappy and kind of limiting his market. And maybe the Bulls were one of those teams that would have limited his market. But if you wanted to get like the guy I mentioned, who's like a star guard, who's maybe overpaid, but then kind of available at a price you could afford because he's overpaid, but is like legitimately a really good star guard. Like Jaylen Brown kind of feels like that guy. And, you know, that would have been like really interesting. Like some of the things he's like the Bulls need some of the things he does, and he can be a two-way player. And he's young enough where you could see how, you know, he could still be a star player when, you know, Caleb Wilson starts to come into his prime and Modest Buzelis is hopefully peaking as a really good player. And Jaylen Brown could still be a star level contributor at that point in his career. And, you know, it would have been really early to make that move right now. But if it only costs you cap room to make that move effectively, and maybe your 2027 pick, which is going to be in a bad draft, that would have been a really interesting first move. And like that move would probably get the Bulls into the playoffs next year, would be my thought. And, you know, I just don't know that there's going to be, you know, a similar type of move available next year. Maybe there will. A lot of star talent moved this year. Maybe there'll be something next year. But I think that would have been a really interesting one. You know, just because of the price ended up being so cheap. And that kind of like fits into like, what kind of star player could you actually get? I think I would have done that move if I was just taking Jaylen Brown into cap space. I'm not a huge Jaylen Brown fan, and I think he's overpaid. But like, in the vein of like, what are you going to do in the next 2 to 3 years with this space anyway? I think the answer is like not something as good as what Jaylen Brown would have given you. That's certainly going to be true this year, where you know, if you were just like, would you rather have Jaylen Brown or Nick Claxton and Norm Powell? I mean, I think I'd rather have Jaylen Brown. So, and my guess is next year you'll say the same thing. And then maybe 1 year after that, you'd say like, oh, I'd rather do something else. But then Jaylen Brown's an expiring deal. And, you know, who knows? Like you'd have the chance to pivot or do something else. So that was kind of my like weird what if that I was thinking about this morning. Like, I wonder if we could have gotten in on that. I wonder if Boston would have favored the savings we would have offered them over the extra picks they got from Philadelphia, or if they were, you know, just really into the extra picks, even though they had to add $120 million in kind of bad salary to take them. So, yeah, loose thoughts there. And I think that kind of would have maybe fit in a lot of these other answers, except they're asking, what can we do next year? And this would have been what we could have done this year. So that'll do it for this edition of the Big Red Bus as I pull the bus back into my driveway and throw it in park. Thank you for listening. Go Bulls.